Mr. Bruton, very good to see me this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your faith is that you practice today, is it the same faith you would have had when you were a young man in Clongowes?
Pretty well. I think I did get a good grounding in the basics of our Catholic faith, both from Dominican nuns actually originally and also later by the Jesuits. I'm very conscious of the fact that this is not something that's available to the rising generation. There aren't priests and nuns available to do this sort of work in the same way as I was privileged to enjoy. But I think, broadly speaking, it hasn't changed. Since I started to speak a little bit about religious-related issues, particularly the pro-life issue, I have found myself being asked to speak at events and having to study a little bit the pronouncements of various popes and things like that about political issues, about human rights issues, about the relationship between the church and state. And I have, in very recent times, made a study of that to some extent, but I wouldn't think it has in any way changed my basic beliefs.
But what about the John Bruton of today? Is he the same John Bruton of your time in government in terms of where you are with your faith today?
Yes, I think so. I think so. I mean, obviously, in politics, you have to make compromises, and you have to deal with other people. You're not just yourself as a dictator able to decide what happens. You're dealing with other people who will have some of them different value systems in some respects to your own. You're dealing with an electorate, a majority of whom may have different value systems to your own. So you have to work to get the best possible outcome from your point of view in politics. That's a different thing in terms of your own life. Your own life you have to live, try to live to precisely to the standards that you've set yourself.
You were the youngest Taoiseach in the history of the state until Leo Varadkar came along. Do you feel usurped by a younger man?
No, not at all. It's elective politics in Ireland in particular is exceptionally demanding, physically, mentally and morally demanding. It is certainly from the physical sense something that's more suited in a way to a younger person. Now, I'm not saying there haven't been some great older politicians, people as old as me or even older, but for the sort of things you need to do to maintain your electoral support in a multi-seat constituency under PR, that's very physically demanding. You have to be out there, you have to be working, 17 hours a day or something like that, to keep people's attention and to keep their support. So that makes politics, I think, somewhat more suitable to, certainly at the medium level, to younger people.
You were Taoiseach at a time of great change in Ireland, particularly with regards to values and also with regards to the peace process and, of course, the establishment of CAB. Do you have anything that stands out particularly that was one of your greatest achievements?
Well, I don't know whether it's a lasting achievement, but I hope it is. I, as Taoiseach, at a time when the IRA campaign had just temporarily ceased after appalling violence, I became Taoiseach at a time when I think the unionist community in Ireland, in Northern Ireland particularly, were deeply alienated from Irish nationalism. And I set out in the way I tried to make sure that their views on things like the decommissioning of weapons, that their views were heard and given attention, as well as the demands that were being made from the Republican community. I tried to reach out to them in that way. And I think to some extent I have succeeded. And I think we're still, that openness of a Dublin government to both communities in Ireland and that sense that a Dublin government potentially could be a better friend to the longer-term interests of unionists than, for example, a government in London, which has so many other things that it's thinking about and rarely ever thinks about Northern Ireland, that I think I may have achieved something lasting in that respect. Also, of course, And this is consistent with my pro-life views, because the IRA were killing people, taking lives. Loyalist terrorists were killing people, taking lives. And the peace was a pro-life issue, just as climate change in many respects. Dealing with climate change is also a pro-life issue. We shouldn't isolate one aspect of the assault on life from the others. They are all part of one consistent moral compass, which, if you like, the Christian Church has set for us.
But we've veered away from that. I mean, there's a lot of people woke up after the 8th, when that was effectively repealed, we lost the referendum. An awful lot of Irish people woke up and felt like strangers in their own land. Did you feel that way?
Well, I saw it coming, unfortunately. I could see that, from chatting to people, that people had abandoned the idea that there were certain absolute human rights and that the right to life was the primary human right, and that a child before it was born was a human, just as a child is human after it's born. And if it's human, it should have human rights. People had, I think, departed from that very firm and clear and consistent position and were adopting, pragmatic views. Oh, well, in this circumstance and in that circumstance, it's okay to take a life. I didn't agree with that, but I could see the way it was going. People didn't want to get into rows with their neighbours or with their children or with people they didn't want to confront. They were persuaded, some of them, that everything is relative. Your truth and my truth are all equally valid. Well, that isn't the case. Sometimes one truth is more true than another person's truth. And sometimes there has to be a hierarchy of human rights, and that one human right is more important than another. Well, the human right to life, to my mind, is the primary human right, because without life you can't enjoy, the right to housing or the right to fair trial or any of those things. If you're dead, these things are irrelevant to you. So I think human rights is logically, the human life is logically the primary human right. And we alone in the world, I think, before the Eighth Amendment was repealed, were one country that actually acknowledged that a child before birth is human and has human rights. And that's a very clear position. We've now abandoned that.
It's not the only thing that's happened in terms of, are you happy where Fine Gael is now in terms of it's looking to secularise education, looking to take religion out of schools and so on? Is this a direction that you, as a long-standing leader of Fine Gael, is happy with?
I think, first of all, that education should include religious education. It's impossible to understand the world without understanding religion.
Yeah.
But it's also impossible to evaluate the outcome of education without having a set of values, a hierarchy of values, if you like. And for us as Catholics, at least, our religion gives us a hierarchy of values with which we can evaluate whatever it is we're learning about history or science or whatever. And that's why I think two reasons why I think religion should be part of the education of Catholics. Now, I know that in the United States, for example, they don't have religion taught in schools. It's taught out of schools. But on the other hand, the United States is a very religious country, and it's sort of something that they talk about quite freely. Whereas in Europe, we have had this idea that religion is something to be kept private. Now, to the extent that Catholic faith formation no longer takes place in schools, that will create a major obligation on parents to ensure that in other ways and in other days or hours of the week, the religious formation is provided.
Do you fear for a moral vacuum if that happens?
I think we already are experiencing something of a moral vacuum where we don't have a clear idea, for example, of the hierarchy of human rights. But I'm not sure that religion is going to be taken out of the schools. I mean, the Catholic Church still controls schools. The Church of Ireland still controls a number of schools. And I don't see any sign of either of those giving up. And I don't see any sign of either of them being compelled not to teach religion in schools.
Brother might disagree.
Well, I don't see that's going to happen. I mean these schools are owned by the churches, they're not going to yield their property rights. Now, I know there will be parents coming along and saying, well, I want my child to be taught atheism, whatever that is, or something like that. And they'll say, I don't want him to be in the class while religion is being taught. Well, obviously, pragmatic solutions have to be found to that. I think we're not going to find a one-size-fits-all solution for the whole country. You know, in a rural parish, you may have 10 different religious points of view. Well, you can't have 10 different schools. In a big city like Dublin, you can perhaps have 10 different schools to cater for different faith points of view. So I think, you know, the idea that there'll be a one-size-fits-all solution imposed from the top is just not on. It won't happen. You know, I don't think any government, whether it's a minority government or a majority government, is going to do that.